100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the sweet day off and 19 no long, so me say.
Hey, Digital Sister back. How is everyone? Well, today I have to start off with this. But first let me thank all of my listeners. I always do that because I'm really very appreciative. But thank you to all my listeners. The podcast is just taking off. I am just so thrilled, you know, that people are really tuning in and finding, you know, the reflections of what I'm talking about interesting. And I thank you for that. So continue to listen, continue to pass the podcast around, continue to send me comments because I thoroughly enjoy hearing from you. And let's just keep interesting, stimulating conversation going on with the podcast. But anyway, let me start off with reflections on Katrina Part 2, the media. I happened to watch the interview of Spike Lee with Charlie Rose on PBS. I haven't watched a lot of interviews with Charlie Rose, but you know, I just found it very interesting that, and I don't know how to put this delicately, but it just seems to me that so many of the Caucasian people in the media just seem to have a hard time understanding, you know, why Spike Lee made this documentary and why he focused so heavily on New Orleans. And you know, as I'm watching the interview, I can tell Spike, you know, he's been around now for 20 years making great film and having to deal with the media who very often, you know, we're not saying nice things about him because a lot of times stuff is rooted in envy. But I think he handled it quite well. He didn't get agitated. He didn't get irritated. He just, you know, let Charlie make his own little comments. And he basically stuck to describing why he made the documentary and the importance of it. And one of the big questions that Spike asked, and Charlie had to look, you know, Spike asked, he said, why is it that when disaster happens around the world, the tsunami when that hit Indonesia, the earthquake in Pakistan, United States had relief, you know, halfway across the world in about 2 days. And Spike, of course, raised the question, why was it 3, 4, 5 days after the hurricane slammed into the Gulf Coast, can't even talk today, and into New Orleans, why, you know, there still was no presence from the United States federal government? He even had Canadian soldiers showing up before the federal government showed up. So in any event, Spike, you know, raised those questions, and, you know, Charlie kind of skimmed over that. He kept trying to, you know, bait some of the race stuff and didn't quite understand why he focused on New Orleans and why he didn't focus on Mississippi and Alabama and all that stuff. But, you know, it just kind of gets back to the bigger issue of it's not a race thing, it's a class thing. But, you know, people have to get past these attitudes. I mean, this tragedy happened within our country. It happened to our fellow citizens who, you know, a good portion were African American. And, you know, I don't understand why it's so difficult to understand that people have questions and people are upset at the federal government. They're upset at President Bush. They're just upset at the ineptitude of the federal government. And I don't understand why so many of these, I hate to say it, Caucasian media people can't understand why people are upset. It just speaks so much of the arrogance and the privilege and the disconnect that many of these folks who are in these media positions who interview people experience. They're living these little privileged lives. They're totally disconnected for the most part from dealing with people who looked like a lot of the people in New Orleans, and they just don't seem to get it. And he, Spike Lee said, he asked, he wanted to talk to Michael Chertoff, but he didn't want to talk to them. You know, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice was asked. She didn't want to talk, you know. Several key people in the administration did not want to talk to Spike Lee and talk about the issues that came up during the hurricane. So I say kudos to Spike. I'm glad he put this out there. I'm glad that people at HBO found that it's something of great merit that they're airing. And, you know, kudos to Spike Lee. I also happened to watch an interview with Glenn Beck. You know, I can't really watch him because he's just so obnoxious. And I've talked about that in my previous podcast, how, for the most part, many of the talk shows on MSNBC and some of the other shows, it's the bastion of white males, and for the most part, white male Republicans. And, you know, I don't know what Glenn Beck's political tilt is, but I can make an assumption by some of his commentary. But he had a young man who was a doctor, PhD, African-American, I can't remember his name, but he was from, I believe, Louisiana State University. But in any event, Glenn Beck had him on to talk about, you know, the hurricane, the issues, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, being the obnoxious, arrogant person that Glenn Beck is, he didn't let this guy answer questions. You know, Glenn would just jump in and try to smooth things around. And if the gentleman made a comment about the lack of response from President Bush, then Glenn Beck was all over him, you know? And it's like, what is it that people cannot make a comment or criticize a person, particularly President Bush, about his failures in some aspects with his leadership? I mean, I don't get why people can't, in this free country of ours, make a comment that, you know, speaks out that there's an issue. And so, again, I kind of suffered, and I do mean suffered through. I suffered through that interview because I wanted to hear it. But he didn't let this guy talk. And then the gentleman kind of just, he knew what he was dealing with. He knew, you know, why he was there. And that's also the issue with a lot of these talk show hosts, you know. They, once a year or every now and then, will find an African-American to come on during a particular topic. And then they don't give the person, their guest, any opportunity to speak and really express their opinion. And if that guest expresses an opinion which is against the host jumps all over them. I mean, that's not a way to have an interview show. You are supposed to, at least when you have a guest, let them speak, you know, let them get their point across. But in any event, I got really annoyed with Glenn Beck, and in some degree, I think I was a little annoyed with Charlie Rose, too, a little bit less so, but just kind of annoyed because, again, it just kind of shows that people in these positions, they don't seem to get it, and they don't understand if people have a different opinion that is different from them. And, again, I go back to the fact that so many of them, they're so disconnected from common people, you know, people of color, you know, that's not even in their social circle. So when you have them on your show, you can see the trepidation and you know, I don't want to say fear, but just the trepidation of even interviewing them. I mean, it's ridiculous. But in any event, there has been some interesting news about Katrina, because apparently the birth rate is soaring, and some of the people said, you know, well, what else is there to do when you're trapped in the house for 3 or 4 days? You know, you do a little canoodling and you take it from there. So yes, there's that devastation, and thank goodness the attention's all focused on New Orleans and the other places in the Gulf Coast that were affected by the hurricane. And hopefully that's going to, you know, get the federal government to loosen the purse strings and get the money to these areas so that they can rebuild, and the money can get to people and people can start putting their lives back together. I mean, I don't understand what takes so long, but yet we can go to other countries, we can send money over there in a heartbeat, we can send supplies and everything else, but in our own country, on our own homeland, in a very important area, you know, 30% of the oil and gas comes from the Gulf area there, and where the government is not doing enough to rebuild and make that a safe area. So, you know, there's just so many questions, and, you know, there are no easy answers, but my God, come on. The federal government has just got to do a better job, and the people in these positions have got to do a better job, and many people in these positions need to come out of their little ivory towers and mingle with the people who suffered and lost so much during this situation. So I'm glad that everybody's, you know, weighing in on this, and I hope that all the media coverage is going to spur the federal government and a lot of these insurance companies who are getting away with some murder right now, because, you know, people have paid premiums for years, and now that they need the help, the insurance agencies are backing out. They're abandoning them, people, in many ways, and they're not, you know, paying the money that they should pay. So, I mean, it's not a time for greed. It's a time to rebuild and get the Gulf Coast back up and running as much as possible. But, you know, I'm just glad that Spike Lee made his video. I'm glad he's making the rounds. I'm glad he's able to get on some shows to talk about it and to continue bringing attention to the plight of the people in that area. Because in so many places, it's still looks the same based on what we've seen on the footage. But, you know, I just hope that, you know, things will get better, and people will stop the politics and just get down to the business of rebuilding our homeland and taking care of our own people. But let me shift gears a little bit. Check this out. Looks like Elton John wants to go hip-hop. And I think that is so, so very cool. But it speaks to what I talked about in the previous podcast, that hip-hop is just an incredible cultural phenomenon that has just taken over. It's, you know, little lingo things are everywhere. In ads, you know, like I said, the Reader's Digest has, you know, the 411 show. I mean, you see 24/7. All sorts of hip-hop phrases are now so much part of the mainstream lexicon. But yeah, check this out. Elton John wants to put some of his music to hip-hop beats. And he said he really doesn't know how to get the beats. He loves them, but he doesn't know how to get them. And apparently he's been listening to some of the hip-hop artists because he could name them. He said he hasn't approached them yet, but he said he would love to work with Dr. Dre, Snoop, you know, Kanye, Eminem, and just see what happens. He said it may be, you know, a terrible thing, but he said it could be a wonderful thing if that happens. And I think that's great because, you know, Elton puts out some good music, and I think probably he's looking for some growth, because he had his, you know, rock stuff and his pop stuff, and then he had a very successful run at writing scores for some Broadway shows, The Lion King and Aida, things like that. And now he's looking out to branch out into hip-hop and to stay relevant and to work with new innovative artists. And I think that would be so unique if Dr. Dre and some of the other guys pick up on this and actually decide to work with him. I think that would be just a really unique situation. And I say kudos to Elton for putting it out there that he would like to work with these great hip-hop artists, and the fact that he wants to be part of that whole hip-hop movement. So I think that's really cool. But I thought it was interesting that he said he didn't know how to get those beats. And, you know, I'm not a musician, of course, but I'm just thinking you can find them or get with somebody, you know, who knows them. But I guess he really is opening up the dialogue so that hopefully one of the hip-hop stars will take him up on it and maybe collaborate. And, you know, we probably could see something very, very interesting. So I'm looking forward to that. I think that would be really, really very neat. And Foxy Brown, you know, Foxy, come on, you got to get back to making some music. Well, it seems she's been convicted of a misdemeanor assault over a manicure with some salon workers, something that happened, I think, earlier in the year. And she had a little attitude when she had to make her court appearances and all that, and you know, the got a little nasty with the judge. I talked about this in a previous podcast, and the judge basically told her, you know, you can go to jail for 30 days or you can apologize for your behavior. So anyway, Foxy apologized and avoided that little stint with jail. But, you know, here she is now convicted with misdemeanor assault over a manicure. I mean, how stupid is that? You know, it's like, come on, people, hip-hop artists, my female rappers and my male rappers, you know, come on. The world is loving the music that you guys have created, and too many of you are exploding from your own little personal demons that you get caught up in. I mean, rally together and just put out some good music and figure out things that you can do to build your career. I mean, she could possibly be looking at maybe some movies or, you know, something. But get back to making music and, you know, let some of this anger management and lack of control with your emotions and your behavior, you know, that's getting you into trouble. So we need to get back to focusing on just putting out some really, really good music. Let's see, what else can I talk about today? Oh, I'm so glad that Senator Barack Obama is in Kenya. Now, that is where his father was from, and he's doing a tour over there, and I think it's really, really great that he had decided to go back and, you know, visit his homeland and probably see some relatives from his father's family. And I think what's great, too, is he has a chance, being the only African-American senator in the Senate right now, to hopefully, you know, shed some light on what's going on in Kenya and hopefully direct some aid and create more awareness for the needs there. But I think what's good for him, too, is he's also talking to the people there about some of the things that they need to do to help their society improve, which one of the things is the patronage jobs, that when people are fortunate enough to get those jobs, you know, they only bring in their family members, and those are the ones that benefit from, you know, the good salaries and perhaps the link with the United Nations. Now, I think I mentioned this in a previous podcast. I worked at the United Nations in the Office for Project Services area. This is the area where they can just build a city and a village in the middle of nowhere, based from the New York office. And as I talked about in the previous podcast, we did. We rebuilt Pakistan and Afghanistan when the Russians pulled out and had to rebuild their infrastructure. And I'm sure it's probably all destroyed now, you know, with the current war that's going on. But in any event, as I was saying about some of the officials in many of the countries, what, you know, a lot of Americans have a really bad opinion of the United Nations because we really don't understand what the United Nations does, and that's our arrogance once again. But what you have to understand is the United Nations is the ultimate Fortune 500 corporation that many foreign nationals aspire to work at. And so if you have ever had the opportunity to be at the United Nations and to actually work in some of the offices, it was just a really refreshing experience. As I said before, I worked for a woman who was from Kenya. I worked for a man who was from Bombay, which is now called Mumbai. I worked with a gentleman from Chile. I worked with a gentleman from Austria. So it was just a very interesting and enlightening experience to work with other people beyond just, you know, the usual people that you end up working with here in the United States. But again, what people don't understand is if you are in a foreign country and you have the opportunity to get an assignment or a diplomatic post, and you have the opportunity to come to the United States to be part of the United Nations, it's just an incredible experience. And so once you get in those positions, you see, you are very favored and lucky. And what do? you bestow other positions and jobs to your family and friends. And so if you happen to be in those little tight circles, you do very well. But what Barack was saying is that it would be very important if those communities could open up how they deal with each other and not be so selective, and increase some of the wages, and some of those things that they could do would help the society at home, and people would be better, and the corruption would eventually weed out. It's probably not going to go away totally, but they could make a dent in it. And unfortunately, corruption is one of the big problems in a lot of foreign countries, because, you know, money's tight or it's non-existent. So if you get in a position where you have access to some things, you know, corruption goes on. And if you are one of those people who controls something, you know, you want your palms greased. And so the corruption is very strong in a lot of countries. I mean, it's very strong in the United States too, but it's very strong in a lot of the foreign countries because so few people have the opportunities to really get into the mainstream. So he's, I think, talking to his fellow Kenyans very honestly and sincerely, and he's telling them that these are the things that you can do to help make your society better as they work as a whole to bring more money and opportunities for the people in many of the cities of Kenya. And so I think it's great that he's over there, and I think it's great that he's speaking very honestly about some things that they can look at and work on. And I think he's being very honest about trying to bring some focus on some of the issues that he can do as a senator within his various committees to bring and help bring some finance or aid or opportunities to people in Kenya. So I just think that's really great that he didn't forget, you know, who he was and who his dad was. And he, you know, he's over there in his homeland doing something, I think, really good and unique. So my hat's off to Senator Barack Obama. I think that is great. Listening to Tom Joyner this morning, he had General Honoré on. That was the one that Mayor Ray Nagin said, big John Wayne dude who came, you know, after the hurricane and just started getting things moving and just, you know, just got things going. And Tom Joyner kind of put it out there that he would love to see General Honoré and a Barack Obama ticket sometime in the future. I mean, wouldn't that be interesting to see something like that? But in any event, I think that's probably it for now. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time, you know, bending your ear about Katrina, but I certainly did want to touch on that since today, the 29th, is the one-year anniversary, and to point out some things I think we can talk about. And again, you know, I'm just really anxious to hear some of your opinions out there. What do you think about this whole thing about what's been happening with Katrina, what's happened over the last year? You know, what do you think? I'm just very curious to hear what some of your opinions are. So in any event, keep tuning in. I appreciate you listening. I thank you for listening, and thank you so much for having the podcast grow. I have such a great fan base all over the world, you know, Big Pockets in Australia, Haifa, as I said, and of course my great fan base in the Denver, Colorado area. Thanks again for tuning in, and I will be back with you in a couple of days with more interesting reflections and discussions that we can certainly share information about. So anyway, have a great week, and I will be back with you in a couple of days. Digital Sister signing out. Take care. We're riding the west side, the west side, the west side.